Hello and welcome to the world-famous Driving You Crazy podcast. This is the show where we talk about all things transportation, anything that gets you from here to there. I'm the traffic anchor and the transportation reporter for Denver 7 News, Jason Luber. If you would like to contact me, you sure can on all my contact links in the description of this show. And that's where you can find out information about my next guest as well, because by now, we have all heard of the rideshare services Uber and Lyft, right? But I bet you haven't heard of InDrive. InDrive. It's a relatively new ride-hailing service to the United States. It's been around for many years in Europe and Latin America, but not here. So what's different about this ride-hailing service, and why would I want to choose this one over the others? To answer those questions and many more, I've invited Adam Warner, head of U.S. operations at InDrive, to be here on the show. Adam, thanks so much for being here on the world-famous Driving You Crazy podcast.
I'm very happy to be here, Jason, to speak with you and your audience.
So let's start at the beginning. I was reading that InDrive started in Russia, and I didn't realize there was such a need for ride-hailing services in the heart of central Russia.
Isn't that funny? Isn't it funny how it started? Yeah, like, it really interesting. It actually started in a really small Siberian town, very small. And it just so happened that it was New Year's Eve. We all know everybody's going out, having a great time, New Year's Eve. So everybody's out doing their thing. And the local taxi cabs services there actually got together and kind of colluded and said, hey, if we all raise our rates, everybody is going to have to deal with this and impact this. So that's kind of like where the first surge pricing kind of came into play many, many years ago. This is about 10 years ago. And so that kind of sparked a Facebook community. And from that Facebook community came InDrive out of, hey, I'm looking to go to point B. Is there anybody going in that direction? And then that's kind of how it started, as just a simple Facebook group.
It's really interesting how people around the world in different places, they just find a need and then off they go. And so it's natural that the service, since it started in that part of the world, then expanded from there through Asia and through Europe.
Interesting. And now we're currently the second most downloaded transportation app out there in the market today. So from that small beginning, we're in over 40 countries, current state. Like you said earlier, we just launched in the United States not too terribly long ago. And so we're continuing to be really excited about our build plan here.
Yeah. You started, I think, in Miami. You're in Atlanta. So do you have it there? I've downloaded the app and I've been at least tinkering with it. And I can see that I could at least try to get a driver here in Denver, but I haven't tried to get one yet.
Yeah. So only in Miami. Obviously I am here in Atlanta, Georgia, but I'm looking for those opportunities in all of these wonderful cities that we have in the United States, and where can our service come in and really provide a third option in the marketplace. So we're continuing to evaluate all the markets and really look forward to coming to a city near you.
My guest is Adam Warner. He's the head of U.S. operations for InDrive, InDrive. You can find them at InDrive.com or on your mobile device. Just search InDrive in your app store. There are a couple of unique aspects about the company. And when I was reading about the philosophy of the company, it's really different about how, I mean, we'll talk about how the pricing works separately, but I want to talk about the philosophy of the company because it's interesting on how they go about their business. Describe that if you would.
Well, ultimately we look to be a true peer-to-peer model. So what does that really mean? It really means that InDrive is only the facilitator of finding two individuals, one to provide a service and one that needs the service, and kind of puts them together. So we're not setting the marketplace rules. I know we'll get into pricing and what that means. And this has kind of shifted over to many different styles of gig economy work, everything from handyman services to courier services, everything kind of in between, and kind of using that same philosophy to kind of appeal to people who are interested in this marketplace.
Yeah, and it says that InDrive is a company run by people for people, because no technology in the world can really replace human empathy.
It's really true. You know, at its core, we have to continue to understand who are the primary customers in this gig economy and making sure that we're equally making decisions that fit both of them. Right. So in our case, in most rideshare, you know, we have to appeal to the drivers. We have to understand what they care about, what's important to them, and really what's important to our passengers as we continue to build this product out.
And let's get into some of those differences, because I really want to know how different is the company compared to Lyft, a place that you know well, because you worked there for a bit over 4.5 years. So compare the differences between what you experienced at Lyft and what you did there to what is with InDrive.
Yeah, and Lyft is phenomenal. Some great people there. Definitely enjoyed my time there, and it definitely set me up for success and being able to come over to this model to kind of build it out. But what's really different about our model, and that I can talk about those differences, ultimately, I think the biggest one that's kind of unique is that I don't set or have any engineers setting price algorithms that are kind of running in the background. That is working to kind of figure out the supply and demand levers, the surge pricing that can sit there and happen and pop up in the marketplace. We don't have any of that. So our marketplace is very unique, where the passenger names their price and so does the driver. And that engagement between the both of them leads to a fair and equitable rate for the driver to provide that service. And so because of that, our freedom of choice that we have on our platform is uniquely different than our competitors, only because you click the button on where you want to go and they match you with a driver and you don't really have any kind of say. But in our world, you put out where you want to go and it goes out to all of the drivers. So they get to see this job board basically, and they get to kind of bid on your ride and to provide this service to you. And so on your screen as a passenger, you're getting to see 7-8 different drivers, different vehicles. You get to see how far they are from you, and you really kind of get to lean into figuring out what's best for you. And so that freedom of choice is the most unique thing that drives me to be really excited about showing and sharing this to any city in the United States. And I definitely look forward to doing that.
Let's say I'm in downtown Miami, since that's where it is right now. And sure. I'm over at the American Airlines Arena, right? And I want to take a ride over to South Beach. So I just put the two destinations in there and I say, all right, I'm looking for a driver. And then on my app, describe what I'm going to see. Am I going to see just a list of several drivers? And I say, let's say I think that ride should cost $5, but the sure. drivers aren't going to think that it's going to be $5, right? So am I seeing them going, oh, no, I think I'll pay $8 or I'll accept $8 and this one's going to accept $37. And is that what I'm seeing? Is it really almost like an auction bidding site, if you will?
Yeah, like sort of. It's definitely a bidding different. It's a bidding situation for sure, no doubt.
And the drivers know what the other drivers are putting in there?
They don't.
Okay.
So so if you are at that arena and you want to go to South Beach and you put in your $5, that $5 goes to all of the drivers that are in your vicinity. So because we don't want people to bid on your stuff that's 45 minutes away.
Sure.
That wouldn't make any sense. So in your vicinity, who's active? And all of those drivers see that you are here and you want to go there, which is also a pretty big difference between our competitors, because those drivers cannot see where this potential match is actually going to go. So you get to see it. It's like, oh, they're going to go to South Beach. I know that route very well. I'm interested. And all of those drivers come back. And you kind of described it pretty well. On your list, you'll see 7-8 different orders from different drivers, and you kind of get to choose the best one that fits you. I kind of look at it as you will probably see somebody go, hey, I'll do that ride for 13, but maybe they're in a bigger vehicle. Maybe they're in an SUV. Maybe, you know, they have kind of a nicer vehicle. And so for them, the expenditures for doing that ride might be just a little bit more. And so you might see some of those come back and say, hey, you know, for a couple more dollars, I'll come pick you up. But you get to kind of see what their vehicle, what they're driving, and have that experience for you as the passenger. But you described it really well.
Other apps, when I'm looking at where I want to go, let's say I want to go to South Beach, it will show me on the map where that route is. And then usually the drivers have to stick to that route and they can't deviate from there. So with this model, if I'm negotiating with a driver and let's say we agree on $15, can the driver then, since we're already set on the price and there's no change in the price really, can he go? Because I'm pretty good with knowing which way to go and some of the back roads and back directions, right? And maybe the drivers learn those roads too. And maybe they know a faster way than what the GPS is going to tell you. Are they free to do that?
They absolutely are free to do that. I think in any good service-related business, just communicating between the driver and the passenger, I think, is always pretty critical, especially if the passenger is kind of following along on some kind of mapping service. And so just making sure that there's communication there. But no doubt, the price is already predetermined, like you stated. Everybody knows exactly what they're paying, or in this case, getting paid for said service. So absolutely getting there safely, efficiently, super important.
My guest is Adam Warner. He is the head of U.S. operations at InDrive. We're talking about their rideshare service and why it's different than the other ride-sharing services. I have the option, though, to say no if I want to pay $5 and all the offers are $15 from the drivers. I can just still say no, right? I mean, there's some of the apps, of course, if once I say, hey, I want to go from here to here, they're going to charge me. I'm not going to get charged if I don't accept one, right?
You're not at all. So if you don't want to kind of go over that threshold, you're absolutely not going to get penalized for not accepting that ride. And on the reverse as well, like the drivers aren't going to be punished for declining and saying, I'm not really willing to do that ride for $5. So we're not punishing anybody on both sides of those. You're only getting charged the moment that the passenger and the driver agree on the price. Once that's set in, that's when you'll use your card on file, whatever method that you're going to pay, and that's when that transaction takes place.
And in that same scenario, I'm leaving a Miami Heat game, who just lost to the Denver Nuggets, and then I'm going over to South Beach, right? And so obviously there's a lot of people leaving the arena at the same time. We already know with Lyft and with Uber that there is that surge pricing model and prices are typically higher. Do these drivers, I'm sure they understand that too. They understand supply and demand and how there would be fewer drivers and the demand is high. I'm sure their prices are also, or what they would want, are higher, but maybe are they in line with Uber and Lyft, or they're free to negotiate whatever they want to take?
Yeah, they're absolutely free to negotiate. And I'll say in terms of big events, because, you know, New Year's Eve just was not that terribly long ago. And demand for these type of services kind of go up tenfold. So for sure, drivers kind of understand that the value of the service that they're providing during those kind of key peak times really goes up. And I'll say what's kind of interesting behavior is we have seen passengers go and see what those surge ride prices are. What is it here at Uber? What's here on Lyft? It's like, okay, cool. It's going to cost me $40 to do this ride. Let me go in and bid 30. And we've seen that they find a lot of success in getting picked up from drivers on our app, because ultimately we charge only 30% commissions. That's it. It's flat. Drivers know exactly what it is. And so they're able to kind of understand what they're getting paid in that circumstance. So you'll find that the passengers in this engagement are getting a really fair deal. And you're finding that the drivers are making the same, if not more money, to do that service.
When I was talking with one of the younger reporters in our newsroom about this idea, she said that she's never heard about it. She was intrigued by it. And the first question that she asked me was, how much of the fare do the drivers get to keep? You said there's a 30% commission, so they get to keep 70% of the fare? Because I thought it was higher than that.
They get to keep 70% of their fares, kind of how the model continuing is to evolving here. And it's a little bit different than some of our peers, because they usually take out their operational fee first, and then they start splitting up what their commission rate and what their take rate is, and what is left over ends up kind of going to the drivers. And that's kind of why you hear in the community where competitors are taking anywhere between 50 and 60% of the total passenger fare. So you kind of hear that in the driving community. And so it's because they're taking that operational fee off the top before they start calculating their commissions. So ultimately for us, it's a flat rate. And so the drivers are taking home considerably anywhere between 15 to 25% more in a lot of cases.
And that's a model that I would think as a driver, I would want to be a part of, even though maybe some of the fares that I'm collecting, because I am competing as a driver with Uber, yep, and Lyft, that I'm probably going to have to price myself or accept offers that are a little bit lower than what Uber and Lyft are, because I want, if I, you know, supply and demand, if I want that business, I'm going to grab it and I'm going to steal it from them. So I'm going to have to, as a driver, accept a little bit less money, but then I get to keep a little bit more money because of the way the commission structure is set up.
Yeah. And it's important in this marketplace to continue to push for transparency. So I know that I care about it. I know that we need to continue to be very transparent so that people can make the right decisions for them. So as I stated before, like, I'm not setting the marketplace. So I ultimately really want the driver to have maximum value. And obviously I want to impact the passengers and give them a third option in the place to do these ride shares. And so, you know, it's very important that we continue to be transparent. Drivers know exactly what they're getting. But yes, to your example, for sure, we are seeing drivers take a little bit less than Uber or Lyft's fare would be. Passengers paying less, but they're getting more because of how the commission structure is faced.
And do the people that are using the app, the people, the passengers, are they aware of this structure as well and how much is going to be going to the driver?
Yeah, I mean, it's always interesting, you know, consumer behavior. How much do they, or are they willing to kind of understand in about the terms of service and what's actually happening? But we do have a large subset of passengers that do understand. And we do have a couple of great drivers that have kind of been pseudo ambassadors for us that are kind of pitching and kind of communicating that to passengers, saying, hey, you know, when you do this, this is the kind of the impact. So you're getting something a little bit cheaper and I'm getting something a little bit more. And so that kind of organic growth has kind of been interesting to see that I wasn't quite expecting previously.
Are the drivers allowed to accept tips? Is that a part of the app as well? Or could I hand them cash, something like that?
Tips are definitely included and can be applied for sure. Right there in the app, if you get great service, you know, please let your driver know that you got great service.
It's almost like real world capitalism and it's an experiment too at the same time.
Trying, you know, it's vastly unique. And what's interesting for us being able to have and participate in this kind of environment and put this product out there for all of us to use, you know, our operational costs continue to go down because I'm not having to come up with all of these different wonderful formulas to sit there and know at what time of day I should raise price to X and at what time of night should Y happen. We're not having to do that. So it's interesting. Yeah, it's kind of an experiment that we're watering and watching grow.
Interesting. My guest is Adam Warner. He's the head of U.S. operations at InDrive. We're talking about their ride-sharing service. You can find them at InDrive, InDrive.com. Do you think, because it seems to me like this is a model that will attract more drivers to the platform than Uber or Lyft, or do you think that they could change their, maybe Uber and Lyft would change their driver payout? Because if this is successful, just like with any business, when one is successful, the other ones, the competitors, they go and try to steal little parts of it, right? Is this a model that would attract a lot of drivers, or maybe won't change Uber and Lyft and their model, and they start looking at something like this?
The million, billion-dollar question. For me, I only really expected to launch Miami with maybe 2,000 or 3,000 drivers to start. We currently have over 20,000 approved drivers in Miami. So completely blew out my expectations and all of my forecasting models that I was trying to do to kind of predict the marketplace. So undoubtedly, we have a product that is appealing to drivers. And I think people who are in this gig economy space really do desire to have different opportunities, different income, ability to help feed their family, whatever their circumstances are. So kind of coming into the marketplace, being a third player, offering something different and unique has definitely been really appealing. So haven't found that to be an opportunity. I will say that you're absolutely right. Like the greatest form of, you know, of
flattery.
Yeah. Is kind of, hey, this is working. Let's kind of see how we apply this into our own world. So it'll be unique to continue to see how they do and how they treat us and what they're willing to do. But ultimately for me, being a positive change catalyst in this marketplace, I think can only lead to good things for all, honestly.
Yeah. You know, because most Uber or Lyft drivers, the ones that I've spoken to, the ones that I've been in cars with, they work for both companies. You'll see on their car, they have both signs, and it's just depending on the day, which one they're going to be working for, or sometimes both an hour for one, an hour for the next. Are you finding that as well with drivers that you have, of the 20,000 drivers that you have, that they're just adding this app and your service to the other two and driving for you one day and Lyft for one day and Uber for another day?
Yeah, you it's always kind of interesting to see the ones that are kind of figuring out how to navigate through the matrix of rideshare. I see multiple people with three different phones, have three different apps up. Who's pinging now? And that kind of determines who I'm working for on that moment in time. Ultimately, for me, I understand that freedom of choice on who to work for continues to exist. So I will continue to encourage, like, hey, I want you to be productive with your time, and whatever circumstance is going to help you kind of achieve that, like, you're going to get my full support. And I'll work really hard to try to win your business as a driver. Like, that's ultimately my job, and I want to make sure that I build a product and give you demand that makes you kind of turn off those other apps for, you know, maybe a day or two.
Has it been a challenge to recruit drivers? It seems that you have a lot that are on hand that are helping you out. Was that a struggle at all, or you just said, hey, here's our model, and people just flock to you?
Yeah. We thought initially, in kind of bringing this global company into the United States for the first time, that we would kind of struggle with a couple things. You know, nobody's ever heard of us. So yeah, we might be in 40 plus countries around the world, but what is this company? So we did kind of think that it would have been a little bit of a challenge to kind of recruit drivers to try something different and unique. But I think as we kind of communicated out what our values are and really what we're looking to accomplish, that's kind of when the floodgates kind of hit us. And I do think that we probably frustrated a couple thousand drivers for sure, because that backlog of getting people approved was definitely a challenge and opportunity at that time. So look forward to activating more and more drivers and just giving them an option to improve and increase their income.
But once you activate a driver, once they have the, well, you have them in your service, it's like any other employer. Typically, it costs more money for an employer to get to train and attract a new employee than keep the ones that they have. So are you working? Are there ways that you are wanting to keep the people you have and the people that you do have, keep them from using maybe the other apps, so you can almost have an exclusive or have the drivers using you more than the other guys?
Yeah, you know, and that's definitely what our competitors do in terms of how do they retain people to continue to work on their platform, right? And so that's when you see these very interesting incentive models that have been built out. You know, if you do 10 rides with us here, we'll be able to provide you a $250 bonus, for instance, in that example. And so ultimately in our world, I don't have any kind of fancy incentive model. I'm really trying to say, hey, you are your own employer. You have a business, you have a vehicle, and you're providing a service. And so you get to set the marketplace. So kind of understand what it is that your business needs is more of how I'm communicating it out and really trying to attract those drivers in this marketplace that really want to cherish their ability to be in control. And I want to be able to give as much control as possible. And so it definitely helps us by communicating that message openly to show what our difference is for people in this community.
I know in other states, California is famous for this, for Uber especially, where the drivers were saying that they aren't getting any benefits and they're actually an employee of Uber, and then they're looking to unionize. Are you concerned about any of those type of issues, or does your model give more freedom to the drivers and therefore they are less apt to be upset like they are with Uber at times and in certain states?
Yeah, it's always interesting. We're always going to have to follow the rules and regulations that kind of come down. Every state is completely and uniquely different. And then the community that works inside those cities are obviously different and unique. I think what's important, I need to understand what concerns the drivers in that community. What is it specifically about their concerns are kind of out there, and how do we sit there and kind of address those? And I think that's going to be a continuously challenging and something that we're going to work on as a continued opportunity. I will sit there and say that, you know, I understand the basic necessities and wanting everybody to kind of have a living wage. But I think you kind of clued in on a big facet of it. It's, you know, we're not setting that marketplace. You kind of get to set it. And so hopefully by kind of having that kind of level of transparency kind of puts you in a position to be successful. And we're going to obviously help you along the way.
And are some of those state regulations and different rules from place to place keeping you or at least slowing you down from all of a sudden going to Atlanta and Nashville and Boston and here in Denver and Los Angeles and all the other places you probably want to expand to?
There are some challenges there. And really, it's just about understanding what those rules and regulations are. So it does hold us back a little bit. I'm not overly concerned about it. I'm really kind of looking for places that I can solve some transportation opportunities, because some of our cities are very car centric, like here in Atlanta for sure. Like public transit doesn't really work as well as we'd all hoped for sure being here. And so we're going to continue to look at what those cities have to offer, and can we come in and provide something that both drivers and passengers want. So we'll continue to look at each one of these rules and regulations as we go along, but I'm not overly concerned about it. You know, it's just about getting up to speed, making sure that you have good understanding of what those laws are, and hopefully come and get that TNC license and operate in a city near you.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that you're only in Miami right now. And where would you like to go next? Where are your next top 5 or 10 cities you'd like to be in the next, 6 months, 12 months, 18 months?
We're currently going through that strategy right now. Ultimately, for me, I'm kind of looking for a mix of, what does the cities have in terms of potential opportunity where people know our brand already? So Miami made a lot of sense for us to kind of launch and kind of build this experiment a lot, because it's a very culturally diverse city. And so people from all around the world come there, whether to visit or have moved there.
And you're already in Latin America, so the people from Latin America know the brand.
So they know the brand. And so uniquely, that kind of helped us learn a lot and kind of get the United States experiment for InDrive kind of out there. So that really helped us. So obviously, I'm going to kind of look at some of those demographics and really be thoughtful about that approach, because we know that it kind of gave us a really good boost to start. And so hopefully when I'm in 5 to 10 cities, now all of a sudden kind of that word of mouth, people on the street start hearing about it. And then, boom, we can end up right there in Denver, Colorado.
Yeah. And you mentioned that your word of mouth is really the advertising that you use there in Miami. You're not doing any billboards or radio ads or TV ads, anything like that. It's all just, hey, I tried this service, and one person's going to tell another, and it's going to be like that old commercial from years ago.
I mean, a lot of organic marketing. We did have a really awesome branding campaign where drivers would get paid to ultimately have kind of wrapped on their vehicles, like InDrive branding. And so that really led to, what is that? I see this car with this logo on it. What is that? And so that's been kind of another unique way to kind of get our name out on the street.
Sure. My guest is Adam Warner, and he's the head of U.S. operations at InDrive. You can find them at InDrive, InDrive.com, talking about their rideshare service, how it's different than the others. So as you expand across the United States, do you see that happening? It almost sounds like it's going to take longer than what maybe a traditional startup company. You're obviously, I know you're not a startup, but it seems like you're going at this slowly and methodically rather than just say, we're going to be everywhere here in the next 6 months and boom.
Well, it's unique about that. And I know from getting feedback from many drivers that they want us in their cities that they currently operate in. So I hear that every single day. But what I'll also say is we're taking a global application and we're integrating it to the United States. And how we do business and how we kind of go about our daily lives is vastly different and unique. So making sure that when I do come to your city, I'm improving the application, I'm improving the service, I'm improving how we handle customer concerns or issues, and trying to work through all of those different components so that when I come to your city, I'm giving you a much better product than I have today. And so I want to continue to have that approach and that kind of mindset of being really customer centric so that we have those improvements in play. So you who are potentially using our application have a really streamlined service. So, but you're right. I'm taking a methodical approach. I might be taking too long. I'm definitely working hard to make that happen. I do want to come to everywhere and visit with everyone in your communities for sure. So hopefully very shortly, you'll see a press release of some of our expansion cities.
Excellent. As you were just mentioning, talking about your app and because we talked about the drivers, you're going to have basically the same driver from one app to the next. But what really makes the difference between the services is really the app experience.
Yep.
That's a huge differentiator, as well as the pricing model that you have. So it's really, you don't have any control or very little control on the driver's car and how they're handling their business with the passenger on a individual basis. It's really, you have very little to do with that, but you have a lot more to do with your app and with the pricing difference. And that's how you can separate yourself from the others.
It's a big difference. I'll sit there and tell you, like, we do have a rating system that I believe is pretty industry standard. So making sure that both the passenger is having a great experience and that they're doing their part and drivers are doing their part in providing that service, I think is still a critical component in making sure that we have the right people on the road.
Lyft and Uber do that too.
Lyft and Uber do it too. No difference there. You know, safety is a primary concern. I want everybody to be safe. So how do I sit there and build systems to make sure that experience is a safe one? So that one's always going to be top of mind. But as you're kind of stating, as long as I'm managing and having the right drivers on the platform, managing having the right passengers on the platform, we should be able to have a really good experience. And then I kind of get out of the way. I'll stand back. You can use our platform to be a conduit system to get that product or service that you're looking for, getting from point A to point B in the most efficient and safe way possible.
Before I let you go, I know you were with CarMax for over 17 years. I just want to get your take on what you think the used car market right now. It's been fluctuating all over the place. I mean, you should know for having that much experience at CarMax. Are we going to see more online selling? Are we going to see the status quo with a mix of dealerships and online stuff? What is the state of the used car market these days?
Man, I'm telling you that big inflation boom post-pandemic definitely raised the pricing for all used cars in the market. I am starting to see that cool down pretty considerably. So that's good for consumers. I'm seeing prices come down. I am seeing a lot of our friends in that space kind of ramp up how they're kind of engaging with the online community. I think you're going to continue to see more and more online sales. And that continued to be kind of the primary and driving factor for a lot of dealerships in the United States. But for me as a consumer, I am happy to kind of start seeing pricing go down. So I'm going to, hopefully the high is behind us, and hopefully interest rates will kind of be cut here shortly and kind of make it a little bit more palatable for us to kind of buy and look at our next purchase there in the automobile market.
Yeah, because ultimately, most of the folks that are driving for you or for the other services, they're using their used cars, and or they will buy a used car to get a job with your service.
Absolutely. So it's kind of unique in bringing kind of that philosophy from my career experience. Definitely kind of keeps that stuff top of mind. So it's kind of an interesting mashup of my transportation world.
Exactly. And did you ever think you were going to be in the transportation world when when you were coming out of college? Is this where you saw yourself in 25 years?
ironically, I studied mass communications. So more of what you're doing is really what I studied. But I was at CarMax while I was going to school, and they just offered such a great managerial program development. And so being able to kind of see what it could do for me and the people that I worked with really kind of brought it home. So next thing you know, I'm kind of in this transportation space. Here I am 20 years later.
There you go. Well, I am too. But look, Adam, yeah, I'm sure you didn't wake up at 2:30 like I did today. So that's the challenge. If you're working in TV or working in radio in early morning, it's early. It's basically the day before.
You're more power to you. I think that you're doing some great stuff by waking up early to make sure that all the forms. So I appreciate you doing that.
All right. Well, I appreciate you joining me and all the insight, the information. It really is an interesting idea. I wish you the best of success, and let me know when you're going to be here in Denver.
Absolutely. I appreciate you very much.
Again, you can find them at indrive.com, I-N-D-R-I-V-E.com. You can also download their app, as I have, but when you put in, let's say you're like me, living in Denver, and you're not in Miami, then it once you put in your destination, your whatever, it just says that it can't find a driver because, well, there's no service in this area. Now, maybe if I put in that I want to go from Miami to Denver, maybe I should try that and see if I can get a one-way and see what that would cost me. But anyway, if you're in Miami, you can use it so you can download the app and to coming to cities near you sometime soon, as it sounds like. It's natural to see more drivers, I think, attracted to this kind of a platform that allows them to keep more of their fare and to be able to negotiate the price. Instead of telling a consumer what you have to pay and putting that power in the hands of the people doing the deal, it seems like it's beneficial to both sides, the driver and the rider. I would really like to see what happens if a passenger puts in a ridiculously low fare. And I want to go for 40 miles and I'm going to pay you $5. I just want to see if all the drivers just say that's ridiculous, or if maybe one picks it up and I don't know. It would be interesting to see if somebody does pick it up. Let's say they're just driving home and they say, well, $5 is better than no bucks. And they pick somebody up and take them and takes that ridiculously low fare. But I would like to see how these negotiations play it out compared to something that is more in line with Uber and Lyft, that is charging for, basically they're charging for the same time and the same route all the time. And this way you get to negotiate back and forth. It would also be interesting to see how drivers adapt to these negotiations. Could a driver of a very fuel efficient car, an electric car, whatever, take less money than someone with a larger car because they are paying less in fuel? Maybe they're paying less in maintenance. They don't have as generally high overhead costs. And so they are able to have a competitive advantage as a driver, as a car owner, than somebody maybe with a larger car that will take more gas, that maybe has to have more expensive oil changes and maintenance on the vehicle. But then again, if I need a bigger car because I'm going to the airport, then how does that all play out? Well, will they have to up their service or amenities to attract the same kind of riders with some drivers? It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. It really is an interesting real life experiment going on here about capitalism, and I'm really interested to see how it all finishes out and plays out, because this could be a new business model for other kind of businesses. I don't know any off the top of my head, but it'd be interesting to see how all this plays out. By the way, I'm off to Europe. Yep, for the first time, I'm going to Europe. I'm going to be in Ireland with my baton twirling daughters, who were invited with their baton group. They're called the Stepperettes from Omaha, and we're an offshoot of them, I suppose, here in Colorado. And we're going to march in the St. Patrick's Day Parade in Dublin. It's going to be my first time in Ireland. It'll be my first time in Europe, really. We're flying directly from Denver to London on British Airways. I'm really excited to see how British Airways flies. I've been on Mexicana, and that was great. That was a long time ago. But otherwise, we've been to a lot of countries on cruise ships, or I just drive across the border to Mexico or to Canada. But you can't drive to Europe, at least as far as I don't have chitty chitty bang bang. So we're taking the airplane. But it's an overnight flight. We're leaving Denver at 6:30 at night and getting to London at 9:30 their time. And what I'm just realizing about this trip is that daylight saving time started in the U.S. on March 10th. So we're already into daylight saving time. British summer time, their equivalent of our daylight saving time, starts at the end of March. So while I am losing an hour this week, I am getting it back when we go to London, I guess. So normally, there's a 7-hour difference between time zones, but for the week we're there, it's only going to be 6 hours. But we're going to get there. We have to go through the customs and get our stuff, I guess. And then we're going to be flying on to Dublin around noon their time and get to Dublin around 1 o'clock. And the rub for me here is that we have to go with this tour company. I think it's called Select Travel. And they make us go on all these outings as part of this trip. It's the only way you get to be in the parade. You have to go with this tour company. And then they do all this stuff that they want you to do, not necessarily what you want to do. You can't book your own trip, your own hotel, and your own adventure, whatever, and then have the parade separately. Like after the parade, we're going to be bused to the southwest side of Ireland. We're going to stay in Killarney. And we were asked, so we're going to stay there that night. And then we were asked for the next day if we wanted to go to the Cliffs of Moher or on the Ring of Kerry. Well, we, as a family, chose the Ring of Kerry because the Cliffs of Moher is like 3 hours away, and then they give you a ham sandwich for lunch on a bus. So I didn't want to spend 6 or 7 hours on a bus just to see some cliffs. I'm told that they're interesting, but I want to have more than just a 7 hour bus ride and a ham sandwich to be interesting. Then the next day, we get to go to the Blarney Castle, which is cool, right? We get to see the Blarney stones and I guess I don't know if there's several of them or I understand there's just one. And then the kids are going to do some kind of a baton twirling performance for whom I have no clue and no idea. Maybe just the people that are wandering around there. So they'll get to see a random baton twirling performance from some people from Colorado and Nebraska. So we got that going on. Will I kiss the stone? I'm not planning on it. There's been a lot of people who have kissed that thing. I don't really need to kiss it. That's not a thing for me. But you never know what happens when you're facing a stone. And what it could be, I don't know. You never know until you're there. The one thing I am looking forward to, though, is later that night is there is a traditional Irish dinner at a place where there's the music and the dancing show and the whole deal. And I'm sure there's a lot of cabbage and potatoes and some meat of some sort. That should be fun. And since I'm not driving, maybe I'll have a pint or two because I'm going to be in a bus. And then the next day, Wednesday of that week, after the parade week, we're cut loose from the whole tour group, and then we as a family are heading back to London to spend a day and a half exploring the sites. My wife bought tickets on this bus that allows you to go to all these different tour spots. You just jump on and off at these different stops. It comes around like every 20 minutes. That should be pretty fun. Overall, I think it's going to be a great time. Way too expensive for what it's going to be because we have to go on this tour group, and I can't find some cheaper alternative transportation or hotels or food or whatever. It's going to be really expensive. It would have been so much cheaper if I could have just booked this on my own and then we could just be in the parade. But no, we have to do all this other stuff. Look, I'm sure it'll be fine. It all will be well. And of course, I'll report back to you when I'm back here in the United States, and I'm hoping that I can take some audio notes and put them together as part of a show when I get back to the back to America. The problem, or maybe not the problem, it depends on your perspective. I'm really not good about posting on social media when I'm gone doing things or when I'm doing anything really. Like I'm at an event, so let's say we're at a station-sponsored event of some sort, and I'm supposed to be interacting with people, then I feel like I should be interacting with the people and not necessarily on my phone for a couple of minutes here and there to post about what I'm doing, and I should be doing what I'm doing and not posting about what I should be doing. Does that make any sense at all? And I'm not really great at that. I like to be in the moment and not necessarily on my phone recording the moment or posting about the moment. But I do like to look back at the pictures and videos and things that, to remember those moments. So what am I to do? I don't know. Well, anyway, I'm going to try to be better about it. Anyway, the trip should be quite an adventure, and I'll detail all of it and bring some good notes. I'm really excited about the airplanes, the airports, the trains. I already bought the tickets for the train that will take us from Heathrow Airport to a place in central London where the hotel is just like a block away. So that seemed like it was the quickest and the least expensive option for us to get from the hotel or from the airport to the hotel and back again. So I already bought the cards of some sort. That I don't know what they're Oyster cards. Yeah, that's what it's called. So we'll see how that goes. Well, I mean, we're pretty excited about the whole thing. Anyway, thanks for being here and thanks for listening. And until next time, I'm Jason Lubin, the traffic guy. Be safe and as always, happy motoring.